Grosso from Vancouver to win it for Canada! Canada came! Canada conquered! Canada gold!
Buchanan with the cross in towards Alphonso Davies! Canada's history-making moment delivered by their biggest superstar! A goal the country has been dreaming about for decades! Finally arrives!
You're listening to the Northern Football Podcast with Peter Galindo, Alexander Gangay-Ruzic, and your host, Ben Steiner.
Hey there, folks, and welcome back into the Northern Football Podcast, post-match edition for Canada against Nigeria, the opening match at the FIFA Women's World Cup for Canada. And it didn't quite go to plan for Canada. Christine Sinclair missing a penalty. Canada keeping a clean sheet, as is per usual with this team when they're playing their best, but no win for Canada, a 0-0 draw at the end of the day, and not the way that they wanted to start this group, especially when you consider the opponents they have coming up in Ireland and, of course, the host Australia. Ben Steiner, alongside Alex Gangay-Ruzic, Peter Galindo will be back with us after the next match. But Alex, welcome back into the show, and how are you doing?
Doing good, and pleased to be back and to be diving into a World Cup, although I suppose it's a bit of a deja vu in that you dominate offensively, you get chances, you miss a penalty, and you end up dropping points in the first World Cup game. So it's a bit of a deja vu on the Northern Football Podcast, it feels like. Although Canada didn't lose, that is a benefit. There were certainly some chances, although that Canadian defense did very well to hold on against the Nigerian threats. And that bodes well, because, I mean, Asisat Ashawala is about as good as any player they'll face in this group stage, especially if Sam Kerr isn't fully fit, or, you know, we'll see what happens with her return in that last game. But yeah, the pressure is up now for Ireland. This is kind of must-win territory for them to control any sort of destiny heading into the last game. You win, the crisis is quickly averted. You beat Ireland, you head in Australia knowing that if you win, you can still advance out of the group as the winner. But as soon as you drop more points, it's going to be a bit of a panic station. So hopefully that isn't the case, because it'd be nice to enjoy a bit more of Canada at this tournament, although the rest of the tournament has been great so far. I mean, Haiti giving England a run for their money, New Zealand getting a win, some of these other games, Japan looking phenomenal. Like, there's been so much good football so far.
Who's been the team that's really caught your eye so far in this one?
Well, I mean, Japan was the easy choice just because they play such aesthetic soccer. It's just, it's everyone's two-footed, everyone's technical, the way to pass, just the efficiency, the cutbacks. That was fun to watch. Otherwise, I mean, there were just good pockets. Like, again, it's like Haiti yesterday, because obviously we're recording, it's fresh in my mind, but like Melchi Dumorne, that's a player. And I was just fascinated to see, you know, how good that Haitian team is. Like, they've got a couple of players playing in the French league. I really hope they push and make it out of the knockout stages. I think that would be that would be great. If not, you look across the first few days, I think I want to say that game with the Philippines, that was also a fun match when they were playing. I think it was Switzerland, Philippines doing well to battle Switzerland, winning in the end. There's just been, every game has been close. I think that's the big difference. Because four years ago, the storyline at this stage was all US won 13-0 and they're celebrating and all that. It feels nice to be like, okay, these teams, it's an expanded World Cup. There was a worry that it would be very uncompetitive. And I think it shows how much the overall level of the game is growing, especially tactically. Like, these teams can defend and then, you know, they're looking good off the ball. And I think that's made a huge difference.
Yeah, there certainly was that worry coming into the tournament, especially when you look at some games like Japan, Zambia. And I mean, that manages 5-0 and Zambia's goalkeeper getting a red card, and Japan probably could have scored 2, 3, maybe even 4 more with the way that game was going and the way that Tanaka was getting just caught offside by a hair a few times. And then you look at like an England, Haiti, and Haiti, of course, like, they're no pushovers. A lot of their players play in D1 Arkema, but you still look at the Euro champions versus a sort of unproven CONCACAF side in a lot of ways. And I mean, it took a Georgia Stanway penalty to get past them. So yeah, a fantastic effort from the Haitians to really push the Euro champions, even though they're quite injured.
Well, it's a penalty retake, one might add, too. Haiti originally had the first penalty saved against England, but no, that's pretty much it. Like, other than Zambia versus Japan, that was the only game where one team was truly like outmatched, like it was dominant. Because even a game like US Vietnam was all US, no doubt. Like, the US were always going to win. The fact that they kept it close 3-0, you know, that's for me shows the big difference that they're really, other than Zambia in that game, there hasn't been anyone where I'm sitting there like, oh, this is severely, like, this is just, you know, it's just a severe mismatch, so to speak. And I think that's good. And hopefully it keeps up because, yeah, I mean, a lot of these matchups we've seen in the first round have kind of been, you know, pot 1-2 teams versus pot 3-4 teams. So I'm kind of curious to see how some of these pot 3 and 4 teams get on when they play each other, and can any of them sneak out the group and then, you know, maybe make some noise in the knockout stages.
And for you, of course, sitting in Vancouver, how difficult has the time zone been already just 3 days in? You're going to last through the entire tournament? I know I fell asleep during the England game yesterday.
You know what? We're actually kind of chilling over here, I'd say, because like you get the 6:30 game, right? That one's very good, like Pacific time. You get the one around midnight I can do. Even the 2 o'clock one, I take that. That's calm. Like it's, yeah, it's 4 a.m., but at that point, you know, 2 to 4. It's really the killers, those 5 a.m. games. That's going to be one where Canada versus Ireland, that's going to be rough. That's going to be one where it's just going to be, yeah, you're going to have to get a few hours of sleep and just dive right into it. So honestly, I haven't minded it. I've been able to catch 2 to 3 a night because of that. Whereas I feel like if I was in the East, I'd only maybe catch 1 or 2 a night just with the, you know, how late it starts over there. So honestly, we're not in the worst position, I'd say. Although I think the real winners might be in Europe because they kind of just get soccer all day, kind of like we did during when the World Cups are over in Europe.
Yeah, I would say it's probably a little bit worse for me than the Olympics were. I don't know. I found Tokyo fairly simple in that front, but that might have just been because I flipped my entire life to Tokyo time for those games.
I mean, also Tokyo was like, it was COVID. Like you kind of have nothing better to do than just like dive in, right? Like it is nice to come home and have evening footy and into the night. Or whereas COVID, you couldn't care. They would play soccer at, you know, 4 a.m. You're there. You're like, sign me up. I'll be there.
Anyways, we'll jump into your questions and we'll start off from W Soccer CA. First of all, thank you all for so many questions. I know that sometimes we don't get a lot of questions on the women's game, but certainly a lot of people showing up to watch the Women's World Cup, 1.5 million tuning in across Canada for that first game. But just your initial takeaways from the game, what went wrong, what went right? And that's the question from W Soccer CA.
Yeah, it was a bit of a strange one because I think overall, kind of the reflection after the game, you dive into the numbers, you kind of piece together everything you saw. It wasn't a terrible game from Canada. I don't think it was, you know, it was, you get the draw in the opening game. Nigeria is a good team. And I think that's something that's very important to preface. I think there's, you know, almost disrespectful talk after like, oh, Canada should be, you know, destroying Nigeria. No, Nigeria is a very good team. And again, I'll say since the start, that's a pot four team you wanted to avoid. But at the same time, Canada did also do some good things. They generated a fair amount of chances in terms of XG. They won a penalty. Overall, they were the aggressor in a lot of the game. Nigeria, pretty much, I don't think there's ever a moment where Canada was going to really lose the game other than maybe that Sheridan slip up in the first half. And that's key because if you're in the control of games, that's what you want going into the knockout stages. But at the same time, in the group stages, you need goals to win games. You need win to get out of the group. And it was a bit worrying that the XG, for example, I was surprised. I opened the plot after the game. It's 1.9 XG. And I'm just like, where did that come from? Like, yeah, they had a penalty. You remove that. You tell me they had 1.2 non-penalty XG. That felt wrong because it felt like for all the chances they had, there were so many half chances where 50-50 opportunities were always kind of in favor of Nigeria. Like it felt like Canada weren't really actually making the most of their opportunities. And I think that was a bit surprising. And then in the second half, the big worry too is that they just completely faded out of the game. Like even when they missed the penalty, so what? You miss a penalty 50th minute, it happens. You have 40 minutes to get back in the game. Yet it feels like as soon as they missed the penalty, they completely fell off and almost, I don't know if it was nerves, it was just rattled. Like it was all of a sudden like, oh shoot, like that was their chance to win and it kind of got to them. But I thought that was a bit surprising because look, you're the Olympic gold medalist. It happens. There's been teams missing penalties across the tournament. But Canada's kind of been, they were just affected so hard by it. And I was surprised because I would have still expected them to just keep going after it and then get a goal in another way.
And also, Quinn was outstanding, but Grosso faded in and out of the match. How do we unlock her potential?
For me, with Grosso, it's deployment. I think 100% because I kind of touched upon in my written work after the game. You just look at Julia Grosso's statistical profile. It's final balls. It's you know, shooting, it's key passes, it's dribbling, and it's ball progression, right? And I think it's something where if you play her deeper on the field, you lose the final action part. And I think that's what was clear to see with Canada, was that you look at her stats, she didn't actually have a bad game. I think she completed around 82% of her passes. And the problem is, in this double pivot, she's just asked to play too deep. And I think it takes her away from what she's best at, which is just being in the final third, being creative, being that spark. And I think what happened was that Sinclair ended up being a like-for-like replacement with Fleming. And Sinclair didn't suit that role necessarily as much either, because as we see with Sinclair with Portland, she's not the final pass player there. There in Portland, she's the ball progressor and then makes a late run. Whereas, you know, for Canada, that when the Fleming role, Fleming is the player playing that final pass. And I think they're asking Sinclair to be the final action player and Grosso to be the progressor, when arguably, based on how they play at club, you'd make it should have been Grosso kind of playing as the more of the 10, and then Sinclair is playing as more as the 8. So I really feel for Grosso is just deployment, because we didn't see her high up the pitch enough. There's too many times where Quinn was below Grosso, and that should never, or no, sorry, Quinn was above Grosso, and that should never be the case. Grosso should be up on the ball in the final third. So I think for her, it's deployment. That's why I say when healthy, it should be Grosso and Fleming up in 8 roles above Quinn. And especially when there's no Fleming, like Grosso should just slot in as the lone 10 in that case and play a double pivot of Quinn Sinclair, Quinn Schmidt, Quinn Awuzo. Cause I think all of those other players I just mentioned fit that role far better than Grosso does. And Grosso fits it, don't get me wrong, but you're just not unlocking the full potential, kind of like AC mentions in that question.
I mean, when you play Grosso in that double pivot, it kind of fits into your typical double pivot where you have somebody who has a little bit more attacking mentality and can really push up the pitch. And that being Grosso, and then Quinn being the more sort of defensive role in that scenario. And they were fantastic in the match, but there might be hesitancy for playing Sinclair in a double pivot, if you want to stick with that sort of formation with that double pivot, which I would imagine that Bev Priestman does. But when you push Sinclair, who of course was your number 9 for years and years, back into that double pivot, it's almost like you're giving up in a sense. And even though I don't think she probably would have started if Fleming were available, because she was so shoehorned into that sort of number 10 position, the absence of Fleming was extremely impactful for Canada, I think, both on the penalty and just the way the game went. I do think that decision to play Grosso in that double pivot probably doesn't get the best out of her, as you suggested.
Well, that's it. I mean, I know it's bold what I'm saying, like Sinclair playing a double pivot, for example, but that's kind of been a point I feel about this attack in particular. You also have to play sometimes players to what their strengths are and what they do well at club level, right? So it's like Grosso's playing as an advanced 8 for Juve. Sinclair plays as like, they play a flat 3 in midfield at times, and she's just like this, you know, this 8. That's what she plays for club, right? It's something where, yeah, it's a bit strange. You're used to Sinclair being the 9, Sinclair arguably even being the 10, but it's something where you kind of have to adjust. It's even like Hoytema, right? Like for OL Reign, she makes so many good late runs into the box, and arrives on crosses. And then again, in this game, it was just too much to ask of her hold-up play. That's not what she does for club. So it's kind of like, it feels like a big issue with Canada's attack. And I mean, I'm sure we'll be asked about it, is a lot of the players also just aren't in roles that suit them. Like if you want a pure number 9, Evelyn Vian's there. She's someone who's going to, she will play back to goal. She will be relentless. She will play in that sort of thing. And I think Priestman's kind of been, as we've seen, kind of been stuck in two minds, in that she has a very clear way of how she wants the team to play. And it worked especially well during the Olympics, because a lot of the players from that Olympic run fit those roles. But as a lot of those key players like Desiree Scott, Deanne Rose, Nichelle Prince are either not here or unfit, or, you know, someone like Sinclair maybe isn't where she was 2 years ago. And attacking wise, I think Priestman's kind of kept pushing new players into the old roles that those other players occupy. And they're not the same players, right? It's like, With Scott and Quinn, that double pivot was so great during the Olympics. Quinn and Gross are just not the same players as Scott and Quinn. They're just different profiles. And I think that's also something we're seeing a lot of with the Grosso question, with the Sinclair. You could argue the same with Hoytema.
Heck, even Adrien Leon is an example of it. There are a lot of players with Canada right now that it feels like they're not being put in their best positions. And that's something where, you know, Priestman's either going to have to make the risk to adjust and be like, all right, let's, you know, adjust our formation so it fits these players. Or, you know what, it's as risky as it is. You bring in players that can do it, right? If Awuzie, even if she's inexperienced, is your closest, you know, Scott replacement, then you play Awuzie. If it's Olivia Smith is the closest thing you have to a winger who can run in behind and stretch the field the way Canada wants, play Olivia Smith. So that's kind of going to be the battle that I think Priestman's going to have to face internally as she prepares for these next matches.
Yeah, I think that's sort of an interesting dilemma that you can almost see sort of crossing over between the men's and the women's teams as well, as there's players that don't necessarily fit into the way that these coaches want to play. And so there's players that are just undefined in their positions. They're not able to have consistency in their positions, and they're not the positions they play at club. So they spend the first 30 minutes to 90 minutes even trying to figure out how to play that position. And then maybe you're looking good from the 80th to the 90th or in stoppage time of the second half, but you're not getting the best out of these players for the full match because they're so unknown to these positions. And I think of W Soccer CA's next question, thoughts on Jordan Heidema on the wing. She's not necessarily used to that role. She's more of a target striker. She's just not used to that. And I mean, you can almost compare it to like an Alphonso Davies playing as a striker for the men's national team. Like, I don't want to be comparing the two teams too much, but there are some interesting parallels there.
Yeah, I mean, the Heidema one's a bit interesting. I mean, as I mentioned, I don't think Heidema is really the, and I think that's kind of the problem with Heidema is that I think, again, I don't know if it's her size. I don't know if she was because she was anointed the next Christine Sinclair at such a young age. Like, I feel like for Heidema, her profile has always just been misrepresented. Like, she's always been profiled as a player that she isn't. And as for the wing, funnily enough, I think it suits her because she, again, she likes to get on the ball. She likes to get in space. She likes to run in behind. But one big problem I had with her playing on the wing was she started actually whipping in some decent balls, but she's also Canada's best target in the box. And it's kind of like unless you find out a way to start crossing it to yourself where you cross and, you know, you have a flash like it's a, you know, an anime show. And then all of a sudden Heidema is running on the box and on the end of her own crosses. You kind of want her on the end of that sort of delivery. So that's kind of the dilemma I'd have with Heidema is that if she's out there whipping in service, she's also the best target. So you'd rather have her in the box. So yeah, the Heidema one, I do think she could suit a role maybe out on the wing, especially if Evelyne Vienne starts. But I don't know, just based on the way she was playing on the wing, it felt like it was a bit out of place. But we'll see, because I think, again, as we'll mention, I mean, Evelyne Vienne should start, and maybe Heidema on the wing could be a way to get those two together. Heck, if you're Canada, you have trouble scoring, why not start both of them together? Maybe that could also be what gets a bit more out of Heidema, allow Vienne to do a bit more of that dirty work, hold up, be frustrating, be annoying, press, and then maybe that allows Heidema to run those channels and do what she's better at. And I think the wing role allowed her to do that, but they certainly did miss her in the middle when she shifted out there.
And throughout the World Cup, make sure to follow W Soccer CA on Twitter, Instagram, wherever they are, a fantastic follow at W Soccer CA for a lot of their platforms. But we'll jump to a question from Jordan SC, and thanks a lot for a lot of questions, Jordan. Was this game a representation of Canada's current form or a microcosm of outside distractions? I think those two things can kind of overlap, because when you look back at Canada's pre-tournament preparation, and of course there wasn't a lot of it, outside distractions, you look at their She Believes Cup, that was severely impacted by outside distractions, and so their preparation, everything leading up to the tournament, has been about the outside distractions. The pre-match press conferences, there were a lot of questions about the CBA and the current financial situations with Canada Soccer and the battle with the players and the players' battle with the federation. So the outside distractions are impacting the current form, no doubt, but I don't think they're necessarily two different things in their own right.
Yeah, I think the preparation one's the big one. I think certainly, again, you can't help but wonder for all the unanswered questions we continue to have and we had heading into this tournament, you can only wonder what more prep would have been like to experiment more with certain, you know, tactics. At the same time, there were still four friendly games this year where we kind of saw a lot of the same things. So you also wonder maybe if Canada also just, you know, did it themselves in the sense that they not wasted opportunities, but again, because again, the She Believes Cup in particular is such just a unique circumstances, right? So I think it's a bit of both. I think you certainly can't look at the lack of preparation without, you know, connecting it to, you know, the off the field, the lack of CBA, although that sounds like, you know, per Sinclair and her pre-opening match availability, it sounds like things are on the right track in that regard. But yeah, well, I'm sure that would have been much nicer to have in January or last year to have out of the way. So I think that certainly has had an impact, but at the same time, it's hard to say from what we've seen of Canada's prep and from what we've seen of them, they haven't, you know, part of it's also on them to continue to evolve and to continue to make the most of the opportunities you have as well, right? Like Canada still did have opportunities. So it's a bit of both.
And for Mayan Zilberstein, why did Sinclair start in that first match? Obviously, there's the aspect of her leadership, but she simply doesn't have the legs to play for such a long time. And it showed. In my opinion, we should get either Lacasse or Vienz in for her against Ireland. Maybe start both, to be honest. And I think if you can get Fleming in, that's the player to make a difference. I would almost say Vienz in for Heidema, and then you start Lacasse on the wing where Rose was. But there's lots of different ways that you can go about it. I thought Rose was pretty invisible in that match.
Yeah, I think really the Sinclair start made sense. Really, as soon as Fleming is ruled out, it makes sense because you kind of want more of an advanced midfielder. Sophie Schmidt, more of a 6-8 these days, right? And were you going to start Simi Awuju, right? Like, all right, here's like your fifth cap. Come on, opening World Cup game. So I think Sinclair made sense. And I think really just what we saw was that it was just she looked bright, really, for the first 30 minutes. I think it was just she kind of faded out a bit. And again, the role didn't fully suit her. She was asked to be played a bit too much between the lines. And I think it asked a lot of her in terms of, you know, running to find that space, her touch, which got heavy at times. So overall, I think Sinclair starting was fine, and she showed it in the first 30 minutes. Really, what maybe could have, you know, I would have seen is maybe she should have been subbed off around 55, 60, because I think she didn't end up getting subbed until around the 70th, if I'm not mistaken. So maybe that was about it. But I think now for the next game, it will be interesting, because I think if Priestman sticks with this double pivot, put Quinn and Schmidt. I think that would probably be the two players that would fit that sort of role. Of course, if Fleming's back, then maybe you should consider the Quinn with Fleming and Grosso in front of them. If not, yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see because also for Canada as well, might it be worth trying a 4-4-2 against Ireland or a 3-5-2 because you're going to play a low block. You can afford maybe to sacrifice one of your defenders for an extra attacker, and maybe that could also be the way to go and start Vianne Hoydam up top, start Lacasse as well, Leon, start a front four of all of those four, you know, just to get some more attacking options. So I'm curious to see how they approach this Ireland game in particular, because that's going to be one where they might have to throw caution to the wind a bit because they need goals and they need a win. And to do that against a 5-4-1, they might have to go a bit outside the box.
And from Afrikaans, what type of player does this team need to have better success against low blocks, especially in the final third? I think they probably got to play out wide. You could see Olivia Smith off the bench in that realm, but also just pushing Grosso up into those more attacking positions where she can do what she does to break those low blocks and to break those lines that she's able to play through with Juventus, because a lot of times Juventus is up against inferior opponents and she's able to do that against low blocks.
I think there's a few things missing. I think the midfield one's the big one. That's the one I'll hammer home. You want to break down blocks, you need players between the lines. You need your Grosso Flemings between the lines if they're available. If no Fleming, certainly Grosso. And then from there, another one I felt like Canada kind of didn't do enough was is get width. I felt like Deanne Rose, she kept kind of playing a little more inverted. Adriana Leon loves to cut in. They weren't getting enough width, because I think width is key. Because especially like Ashley Lawrence, right? Her delivery is world class. She's out there providing width. Either she's left alone and you're getting, you know, free cross after cross after cross into the box and one of them's going to connect, or defenders have to push out to get to her and it opens up space in the middle. And I think Canada also didn't provide enough width either through their wingers or through the fullbacks. And I think that's something where they'll have to look at for Ireland. pick one, right? Like, if they want to keep playing with wingers, get your wingers to maybe stretch a bit more. That's where Ask Lacasse, I know it's not necessarily her natural role because she loves to cut inside, but maybe ask Lacasse to stretch the field a bit more, or, you know, put someone, maybe move like Jade Revere up to the wing. As bold as it is, you might need to experiment, right? You might need to try something, maybe get Revere to play a bit more on the wing in a hybrid role. But I also, I did feel that the lack of width did make it too easy for Nigeria to defend. And I think that'll be key against Ireland because, look, they play a five at the back. If Canada doesn't provide any width, Ireland will be laughing in terms of just being able to sit in that five and frustrate Canada. So that'll be something I'm watching for.
And with the wingers out of form, would a change to a 4-4-2 or a 4-2-4 be better for the current roster?
Absolutely. I think if we're talking about, you know, a lot, those wingers not maybe being able to stretch the field, because I think when healthy, Nichelle Prince can certainly do that. You know, Deanne Rose as well. But if they're, you know, they're not going to be up to full fitness, maybe a 3-5-2 where you sacrifice both wingers, but that allows a Lawrence and a Revere to play higher up the field. That could be a way to go to really sacrifice it or to get some width. Or of course you could also play like a 4-4-2 or, you know, our 4-1-2-1-2 diamond and just get the fullbacks to push forward. But in that case, you would need to get your six to drop deep, but Quinn can do that. So absolutely. I think I'm all in favor for providing more width through the fullbacks. Cause if I think Lawrence and Revere's delivery is sublime. And, I mean, we didn't see enough of that. Revere, to be fair, was playing a bit of a different role, dropping into the back three, and she looked comfortable there. But if, you know, you're not happy with your current wide options, getting some sort of hybrid back three model might be a way to get it.
And also from Jordan SC, should Christine Sinclair be held accountable for pulling an Alphonso Davies in an opening World Cup match? I don't really know what held accountable necessarily means. I mean, Alphonso Davies was trending on Twitter during the Canada game, and you could tell why. And Adam Jenkins with a screen grab of both penalty stops. But yeah, I mean, penalty misses happen. You don't always score 15 like the Whitecaps did against Club Leon in a 19-round penalty shootout. That was insane at BC Place last night, but that's a complete sidetrack. Should she be held accountable? What's that look like?
I mean, again, it's like it's the whole penalty debate all over again. And again, in this one, it feels hard to say because it's like, really, who? Yeah, I mean, yeah, there are a few other players you want to step up. But at the end of the day, Sinclair was the captain, 190 international goals. It's someone where, you know, it's not as like egregious, I'd say, maybe Alphonso Davies, where like, yeah, you're looking around and Jonathan David's there, Stephen Vitoria's there. Like, okay, maybe was that fully the right decision in, you know, in terms of that? No, but I think it's something where, especially with no Jesse Fleming on the field, you almost respect Sinclair for stepping up and take it, because she doesn't really want, like, she's never really wanted to, especially recently. Like, we have to remember in 2019, she gave away that penalty, right? Janine Becky had the chance against Sweden because Sinclair, everyone was looking, will Sinclair take it? No, I'll let Janine take it. And we saw it at the Olympics too, right? Like, penalty comes up, Jesse Fleming ends up taking it. Turns out they discover they got a bit of a penalty specialist in Jesse. So I think for me, really, I was a bit surprised that someone else didn't maybe step up, right? Like, couldn't Ashley Lawrence have stepped up? She took a great penalty against Brazil last fall. Could Julia Grosso have stepped up? She obviously scored the winning penalty in 2021. So I don't think it's one where it's as egregious because Fleming wasn't on the field, because there wasn't a clear taker. Because even again, in Lawrence and Grosso's case, I'm talking about maybe one penalty over the last few years, right? Like, there's not a history of them taking it with regularity. So look, it's something where Sinclair stepped up. Maybe if she was uncomfortable with it, should she have not? Possibly, but also like it's one of those where I don't know. It didn't feel as egregious as say the Alphonso Davies one.
And from Jordan SC as well, was Nigeria more effective going through the middle? And did they turn it into a street fight every time Canada entered the final third? Because it was certainly a rougher game.
Well, I mean, to answer the first question, not really, because I think Nigeria's best threats kind of came from wide areas, and that's why Oshawala was kind of leading the nine. Her best touches kept coming on that left wing. She had to kind of tuck over just to get any sort of service. So again, if we want to talk about Canada defensively, they were very good, kept Nigeria out the middle, you know, had a lot of good 1v1 moments. So that was positive. And then in terms of the street fight, yes, but that's, again, that's the way to defend Canada right now. And if you're any other opponent, why not stop? If you jam up the middle, Canada's proven that they struggle to break down those low blocks to get those passing combinations through. So Nigeria did it. A lot of teams have done it, and I expect Ireland to do it. And that's why for Canada, it's fascinating, because it's kind of like, you know how teams are going to play to you. Can you adjust, and can you find a way to break through maybe some of that slop, some of that clog that teams will put in the middle to slow down Canada?
Also from Jordan SC, do we have an official nickname for the Canadian women's national team at this point? Can we update at Fox Soccer on the revelation? I've got nothing. I mean, Les Rouges has always sort of been the way that I've gone, both for the men and the women. But yeah, there doesn't seem to be something that's really consensus for the women's national team.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised Canada Soccer hasn't like stepped up and just adopted Les Rouges. I thought that was pretty like anonymous, or not anonymous, but pretty like synonymous with Canada, especially the leans into the French. You know, it's not as straight up as all the reds, right? Classic. So I don't know. I feel like the Rouge kind of it fits in. Plus, you get a CFL reference. Come on, right? No, but no. Jokes aside, I mean, I feel like it's Les Rouges, and that's funny that I feel like, if anything, my surprise isn't so much with Fox. It's like, come on, what do we expect here? Like, it's Fox. It's more just like Canada hasn't actually officialized the Rouge nickname, because I thought that was kind of a given. But maybe that's also just kind of the Voyageurs have adopted it, whereas Canada actually themselves hasn't. Maybe it's time. Maybe this is a message that it is time to adopt the Rouge moniker officially, so we don't avoid maybe some of that mishap in the future.
And from Vince Alvarado, have Lacasse and Vienne's done enough to start, or are they still better against tired legs?
My answer is they have absolutely done enough to start. I think the Evelyne Vienne train has well left the station. I don't know what more she needs to do to start, because yeah, it's something where just like I kind of, talked about it on Twitter, but it's like the thing is with Vienne in particular is just like she brings this sort of energy, like to use the French term that I evoked. They provoke sur le terrain. Like she goes out there and she wants to make things happen in the final third. She runs. She's got this tireless energy. She presses, and yeah, maybe she's able to show that against tired legs. But you kind of want to see what that brings from the start. So I think Vienne in particular is one, just because again, for Hoytema, she continues to do well at club. She continues to have flashes for country, but at a certain point, she's struggling to score against these tier one teams for the most part. Pretty much her, only tier one goal in the last while has been France. And even that was a bit of a gift from the goalkeeper, whereas Vienne has shown that in the past, she has also scored against some tier one teams and can make things happen. So I think for Vienne, absolutely. It's something where she deserves a look at the nine. And maybe if it's something where you want Hoytema, you shift her out to the wing, like, we mentioned off the top. As for Lacasse, I'd agree the same as well. It's just something where between her club form and she just continues to show sparks off the bench. She's also had chances to start where she hasn't taken it. So it's maybe something where you could also look at that. But you also just need to give her an opportunity. It feels like for whatever reason with Vienne, Lacasse, it's always one step forward, one step back, right? Like they have a good performance off the bench. They need three of them to get a start. Then they have one okay start their bench right away, and it feels like maybe they haven't gotten as much leeway as some other players in the attack have. So I'm all for giving Lacasse and Vienne a chance and giving them a run, like see what they can do, because they show it at club, you'd have to think it translates eventually, right?
And from Thomas Hewitt, which player to come off the bench is most likely to start? It seems like there were a few who could. My mind goes to Chloe Lacasse and Evelyne Vienne, but if Jesse Fleming is healthy and able to start and go an hour, then it's going to be her, and there's no doubt about it.
And you could even argue Sophie Schmidt as well if Fleming isn't good to go. I thought Schmidt looked comfortable, when she came on, and continues to have a bit of a late career renaissance. So again, it's something where for that midfield, no Fleming there, Schmidt could be a natural replacement in that regard. So I'd say between Lacasse, Vienne, I feel like Vienne's kind of the favorite. Of course, Fleming's the favorite if healthy, but we won't go into is she healthy or is she not. So I'd say Vienne, and then I'd say Lacasse, and I'd say Schmidt, probably in that order.
And from Aaron Benson, why does Bev Priestman use the same players, such as Sinclair, always starting for Canada, as it's not working? Why doesn't Chloe Lacasse start, as she will score goals? Should Bev Priestman's contract be reviewed and replaced with another coach if Canada isn't successful? On that last one, same as the John Herdman questions, is Canada going to find somebody better? and I'm not sure they would.
I mean, maybe, although, I mean, Carmelita Moscato could always be an option. Like, there, it feels like there's a, you know, a few more options in that regard, right? I guess you could always look at Rian Wilkinson as well. Like, there, you know, there would be options there. And I mean, it is an interesting question because ultimately, like, Canada feels like if they don't make it out the group, that would be something where it's like, it's not like, you know, say with Herdman, you know, you lose at the World Cup, they hadn't been in 36 years. Like, this is a team that's made it out the group of the last two World Cups. They're the Olympic champions. I think it's, so that's why I think it's something where, especially if they go out like in an uninspiring fashion, I think it would absolutely be on the table and there would be more candidates to look at. So I think it's something that it'll be interesting to see. And I think for Parise Manama, be a huge two games because this is going to be a chance for her to, you know, maybe adjust to adapt on the fly. And that can sometimes be the hard things for coaches. And, you know, Parise has done it well in the past, but also there, you know, there's been a, we'll see because she's also been quite, you know, loyal and committed to her tactical setup, her four, you know, her double pivot, etc. So I'm going to be fascinated to see how Parise adjusts because it kind of does feel like between a lot of these results lately, the book's kind of out on Canada. And I think at that stage, it's going to be up to Parise to maybe inject new players to catch the other teams by surprise or to switch things up tactically. And because, yeah, I do think if they don't make it out the group, the pressure could quickly mount. And yeah, maybe there's an Olympics next year and that could be a chance for her to save things. But also if you're Canada, you don't want, if you're Canada's the defending Olympic champions, first of all, they have to make it to the Olympics, which is more pressure on Parise in the fall, potentially. You'd want them to go into that tournament best possible. So yeah, it's crucial two games for them, no doubt.
And from Blair Donnelly, any chance D'Angelo sees some action? I'm not a big fan of Sheridan. Her footwork is poor, and she tends to make at least one blunder a game. She does well in the NWSL, but at this level, I'm not quite sold yet. Would D'Angelo be a better matchup versus Ireland due to her European experiences?
It's a good question just because Canada has that luxury of a top backup like D'Angelo, but also I think for the most part, Sheridan has, you know, has not done anything close to enough to have lost the net. I think she also made some fantastic saves, and that's kind of what you get with Sheridan in that she is just, you know, she commands her box so well. She makes these big stops. She's comfortable on her line. It's just, yeah, sometimes you might get, you know, some of those hairy moments with the feet, but I also think it suits Canada's defensive style, right? It's something where the way Sheridan plays behind that block, they just complement each other well. So I think for D'Angelo, it's something where maybe if Sheridan has egregious errors, it's something you open up. But I think personally, Sheridan's been Canada's arguably best player this year. Like, you can't forget how good she was at She Believes, you know, et cetera. So it's something where, yes, those blunders have been there, but I don't think she's done enough to open that discussion quite yet.
And that's all we've got for this episode 131 of the Northern Football Podcast. He's been Alex Gonge-Ruzic. I've been Ben Steiner. Canada 0-0 in their opening match against Nigeria, but a big match against Ireland coming up. That one going to be in the early hours of the morning for everyone in Canada. And then, of course, we'll see you after that one for episode 132 and the likely return of Peter Galindo. Thanks so much for listening.